Devices Radio Network.
Blood, Sweat, and Gear is for informational and educational purposes only. Kids, don't try this at home.
Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. I'm Scott McNally, and with me, as always, Skip Hill. What is up, brother? Back from the dead. How you doing, man?
Back from the dead. I have my sexy voice on. I've got a little bit of bronchitis.
Oh, Jesus. It's not one thing, it's another with you, I'll tell you.
No, that's self-diagnosed. It might just be a really bad cold, but when I cough, like, pieces of my lung come up, so I think that's bronchitis.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good.
No. It's always something. I'm barely alive. So,
well, listen, I want to get into all of that. And I got a lot of feedback from our last special edition episode that you and I whipped together right before I left town. But we have a special guest and I want to bring him on as soon as possible so we can get this show cooking. How does that sound, brother?
He's special. So special.
This is somebody you know well. We've talked about the Armbrust Pro Gym out there in Colorado. Today we have with us Dylan Armbrust. Thank you for being with us, brother. This is definitely our huge pleasure.
Oh, it's my pleasure, guys. Good to be on and hear from Skip. I haven't heard from Skip since he left town. I mean, you kind of like left town like you stole something, Skip.
You know, I don't do the emotional type thing because I don't like to cry in front of people. So I just get the fuck out.
Yeah, you did a good job at that.
I did. I was like, I'm
out. How many weeks does Skip got? And they're like, oh, shit, he left like 3 weeks ago. I was like, oh, nice goodbyes.
Right.
It wasn't because I didn't want to, but I do avoid situations like that because it was tough. We miss Colorado. We love it here, but we do miss Colorado. I miss everybody. I miss the riding. I miss the gyms. Real quick, when I'm down here at Titan Gym and I look up at the video screen and, you know, Phil is on, you know, they run loops, video loops. So I see APG and I'm reminded of, you know, it was funny. I said to the guy one day, I'm like, oh, I trained there for years. He just looked at me and walked away. I'm like, and I laughed. I'm like, you're right. You don't give a fuck and nobody does down here. So whatever.
So, Skip, let me tell you, I was out at the Chicago Pro this past weekend with my clients that had just turned pro, and we were, you know, making the debut and everything. I've talked about that endlessly, and I'm not going to stop because I'm so excited, but that's not what this show is about. I was walking with Joe Russo over to get tanned, and lo and behold, I see this big, jacked, tanned guy, and I say, hey, that's Adam Young, and I figured if Adam's around, then Dave Kalick can't be far away. And you know the way I feel about Dave. He's like my favorite dude in the world. And boom, there he is, Dave Kalick. So Dave and I start talking. And he says to me, he says, hey, have you met Dylan before? And I look over and I see this jacked dude in a tank top, shaved head, goatee. And I say, no, you know, hey, nice to meet you. And then it clicked all of a sudden. I said, of course, because, like, you know, I'm a super bodybuilding nerd. I'm like, oh, you're Dylan Armbrust, aren't you? And he's really cool. So, man, it was great to meet you, Dylan, this past weekend. And, man, you're a cool dude. And obviously, you hang with cool people, man. How did you feel about the work that Adam did this past weekend?
You know, likewise, you know, getting back to you, it was really great to meet you too, Scott. And it's like I said, when we were talking earlier, it's like you just get to finally meet these people you hear about in the industry, and it's, you know, when they turn out to be good people like yourself, it's kind of cool. So, but to get to Adam,
well, thank you.
I was really happy with, you know, how he's able to finish out this year. You know, if it was up to him, he'd go all the way to the Olympia, but,
sure.
You know, I just don't think that's in his cards this year. Could he stand up there? Absolutely. You know, it's, you know, but I think next year be a better year because just watching him year to year, he just gets so much better, and he's just relentless with his work ethic. So it was really, you know, it was fun to watch him this year.
How long has he been training over there at your gym?
You know, Adam walked in the door fresh out of college like 6 years ago, and, you know, he's, you know, Alabama accent. Like, I want to be a bodybuilder. It's just like, you know, okay, well, here we go. Let's get at it. You know, so it's been about 6 years, and, you know, he's battled through the Nationals, got his pro card, and now he's battling through the pros to, you know, try to become one of the top pros.
Yeah. Now, you've seen a lot of people come up in bodybuilding, and I'm sure you've even seen more people say that they want to be a bodybuilder. When you meet someone like Adam, do you believe right out the gate, like, yeah, this guy's got it? Or is it kind of like the thing, well, like, we'll see if you're willing to work hard enough. And then a guy like Adam comes in, and then he proves himself and continues to make that progress.
You know, at this point, I'm sure, you know, I don't know how old you guys are. I know Skip can attest to this. But you take what people come to you with now with a grain of salt. And you just, you know, I put about as much energy into people as they give me. Mm. So, like, as a trainer, I'm really not motivated to train somebody unless, you know, they're showing me a lot of enthusiasm and energy to train. So that's just where I'm at. So, you know, it doesn't really matter to me anymore. But, you know, Adam just kept coming, and, you know, we developed a relationship. We got, you know, good friends, and, you know, he understood it, and he understood that, you know, the sport's not very forgiving. It's just, you know, you got to go. And then once you're done, they don't care. Life goes on. So, you know, it's, you know, to answer your question, I didn't know if he had it. I didn't really care at the time, but he proved over time that he was worthy. And, you know, that's what gains my respect is seeing, you know, the hard work.
That's badass. And he has. I mean, he's put on a lot of muscle. And, I mean, he stood up there in an incredible lineup.
And then in the open,
I thought for sure that they were going to give that one to Sergio. I just had a feeling because the crowd loved him.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I think it could have gone either way. I think the other guy was a little bit better conditioned.
Yeah.
I like Sergio's physique better. He's, you know, more muscular. And, you know, to me, you know, now it's kind of about – whoever brings the best conditioning wins. And that's what I kind of like about classic physique is that's not so much the case. You know, you know, sometimes it's about the better physique, and, you know, hardness shouldn't always win. I mean, you definitely got to be in condition. You can't show up a fat slob, but, you know, if you got some really good genetics and pretty lines and you're not the hardest one in the lineup, then, you know, you probably should still win.
Yeah. So, let's talk some Skip Hill here. How long ago did you meet Skip?
Skip and I go back, what is that, like 16 years, Skip, maybe?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that. I think it was, I remember having my first conversation with you, I believe, when you and Heather were at the expo. My sister had just passed away, and I had been up for about 3 days to try to get back from Michigan for the expo. And I had a problem with a client who will go unnamed, even though he should be named, who destroyed me. Throughout the weekend while I was dealing with my sister. And I kept up with him. It was crazy how I went out of my way to keep up with him, knowing that he had his show. And it ended up being vicious. And it was Heather who said to me, you should have just laid into that motherfucker and everything. And I'm like, well, we're going to get along just fine. So yeah, right. That was the first conversation I think I remember. I always wanted to train there, but I lived on the east side, and I always had my rotten kids in tow. So I was changing diapers, and I needed a daycare, and APG didn't have that at the time. So I was stuck at Better Bodies until I moved up to Evergreen. And then I was, you know, my kids were older, so I was able to get in there. And it was a little bit late for me because I was kind of coming out of competing at that time. And when I say come out of competing, the realization that, oh, I'm not going to turn pro. So, and it's funny because, Dylan, your response about giving to your clients what they, you know, the same type of, you know, work or the same type of attention that they're putting into their training. I love that because, honestly, I think that Adam – it's just my opinion. I think he's outworked his genetics. I don't think he's got great genetics, but that son of a bitch has a work ethic.
Absolutely.
It's just insane. And I've got a tough question for you. And if you don't want it, I get it. But I know you work with him, and there are some times where you work with people and then they end up going to kind of a, and I hate to say like a higher status, but, you know, moving on to kind of like the Dave Kalick, where it's kind of a, I don't want to say it's a status thing because Dave knows his shit. But they end up transitioning. And when you have that rapport or a bit of a friendship, is that a difficult thing for you?
No, it's actually my idea, to be truthful with you. You know, Adam and I kind of grew this more of like a friendship. I mean, Adam still probably trusts my eye more than anybody else's. You know, he, but, you know, Dave, he's able to have more of a bodybuilder coach relationship with, as to where, you know, anymore, we're just brothers, you know. We chill and hang, you know. He still respects me. I respect him as a bodybuilder. He respects me as a great coach, good set of eyes. But, you know, it was our time to just me not be 100% responsible for him all the time. And, you know, Dave's really passionate about, you know, men's bodybuilding and stuff like that. And I just figured, you know, I actually hired Dave to help get me ready for Masters Nationals last year. And, before, you know, I kind of got sick and had to back out, but, and I just thought he was a good guy, and, he's very, you know, attentive, and he knows his shit. So, you know, I just was like, you know, you should probably, you know, try Dave out. And, you know, it's been great, because really we all three kind of work together. But, you know, Dave, for the most part's, you know, doing everything, but, you know, they ask my opinion on stuff. I, you know, when it gets close to showtime, you know, it's nice to have a couple sets of eyes instead of just one. So it's, I just like it this way. I think Adam likes it this way. And, it just really works well this way.
Cool.
Hey, we've got a bunch of questions that people have submitted, and I've got one that fits in here perfectly. I actually reached out to some of the guys that know you, and I had asked Ivana Ivusic and Brett Wilkin and Adam if they had any questions. Brett actually fired back a whole load of them to me, and one of the questions he had is, and this fits in great right here, can you tell us a little bit about your competition history?
Yeah, you know, I loved bodybuilding since, you know, I started competing when I was 15 years old. I actually went to team nationals. I think it was 1990 team nationals. I competed in, maybe it was 1990. I competed with George Bentoncourt, Mike Morris, all those guys. I placed seventh. I was all natural back then. Wow. And I went to nationals and realized, how do these guys get so damn big? Holy shit. So, started way back then. I competed, till I was about 21. Just kind of stopped for a while. You know, I didn't really have anybody to look up to. There was really no big name bodybuilders around. So, I thought it was time to grow up, get a job. So I kind of, you know, did the thing of in my 20s. I still worked out. I just stepped away from competing through most of my 20s to get a career in, it was land surveying. I was doing engineering and land surveying in the construction field. So
yeah, nothing to do with bodybuilding. 10 years
of doing that, I realized I don't like this. This is too much like work. So I got back into bodybuilding in my late 20s and, you know, competed a bit, nationally. That was all the further I ever went. I think my biggest highlight was winning junior, nationals. I won the heavyweights in, gosh, I can't even remember what year it was now, like 2001, maybe 2002.
Nice.
But
that's before all the other divisions came around too. That was when you came to do bodybuilding, or you stayed home, one of the two.
Right. And, you know, it just didn't, I didn't have any guidance, and, you know, I wasn't going to go out to Venice. I wasn't going to do any of that. So, once these guys realize how much, you know, with the internet and the guidance and everything they got nowadays, they're really lucky.
Yeah, no kidding, right? I have to laugh sometimes. It's like, you know, we used to have to wait 3 months for, you know, the current information to come out in a magazine. And it was misleading at best when it came out, because I always thought everybody was shredded all the time.
Yeah, and then, but it was pure gold to us.
They do get fat. They just don't allow their pictures to be taken when they're fat. You know, you say 2001, 2002, you did like the Rocky or something. Right before, is that what you qualified for?
Yeah, I did the Rocky. That was my comeback show after 9 years. I won the overall, and I went to junior nationals the very next year.
I saw you and did not know you then. And I remember thinking to myself, everybody in this fucking crowd knows this guy. Who the fuck is he? Like, they raised the roof.
Yeah.
It was insanity. And I'm thinking, like, who is this Ball Muller? He's a good bodybuilder, but I have no fucking clue who this guy is. That's funny. Yeah, I remember
that. From the past.
That's badass.
And then after juniors, you know, I met my ex-wife, and the rest was history.
Right, body, wild ride, wild and fun ride.
So, where did deciding to open a gym fall into the picture?
I got laid off in 2007 from my job because the economy crashed, as you know, in 2008. And the gym wasn't doing good that we were training at. It was getting ready to close. An older guy owned it whose health wasn't very well. And, you know, he just asked if I'd wanted to buy the gym. And at the time, as I was laid off, I started personal training people. And I was like, well, shit, if the gym shuts down, I'm really screwed.
So yeah. Right.
I really had no choice but to kind of, like, you know, take it over. I wasn't, like, not wanting it, but it was very scary, you know, at the point, you know, because I was like, you know, there's no economy, you know, I'm gonna buy a gym. And but, you know, I figured it was a chance of a lifetime, so I took it. And the rest is history. I mean, the gym wasn't anything what it is today, you know. It was a lot smaller, you know. We've done a lot of work to it. We've added tons of equipment over the years. So but when I took it, it was where I was training. It was kind of like an old dirt hole hardcore gym. And That's how it started back in 2008.
Wow. So, Skip, Dave Kallick tells me that it's an incredible gym today.
Oh, it's absolutely an incredible gym. There's, you know, I think moniker is the right term. The Mile High Mecca. It's not the equipment. It's not the people there. It's not, you know, because everybody thinks, oh, it's because Phil trains there. Trust me. And I'm not taking a shot at Phil. I, you know, a shitty shot. But to see him train, you're not going to suck off the intensity from him because there isn't all that much intensity. You just suck off the fact that it's Phil Heath. So it's really, it's hard to explain, but it's just an overall atmosphere of everybody killing it. Everybody in there is just married to bodybuilding, their passion. I mean, people, you know, people drive such retarded, you know, lengths to and go to such lengths to get there, to want to be there. And that's why the Mecca moniker it fits, because that's what people did in Venice for years.
Yeah.
And I think it's just the place to go. You have your East Coast, you have your West Coast, and, you know, APG is the place to be. And I think, too, it's kind of odd to me that there have been so many people that have come from nothing. You know, the Adam Youngs, the, you know, Dorian to some degree, all the female competitors, you know, yeah. Heather.
Heather Grace, definitely.
Yeah.
She was, you know, a nothing figure competitor. Now she's third in the world in women's physique.
That woman was driving a car. God love her. She's awesome. Driving a car to Better Bodies with a fucking headlamp that was dangling out the front of the car. I mean, and I remember her from those days. And you would have never thought. So what it does is it just gets these people together with this passion for the sport. And then they just, you get them together, and it's just a different atmosphere. It's, you know, when I say it isn't the equipment, it isn't the people. What I mean is it's everything together, and it's just it's electric. It's just different. You have to be there to really, and you got to be there on the weekends. You got to be there on leg day when everybody's just chilling shit, puking. It's just different.
Jesus. It's giving me chills just thinking about it.
You're always going to see somebody. You know, I always laugh when I see Waddy in there because he's, you know, he's up there and he's training a lot of people and stuff. And, you know, you're going to see Dave. You're going to see, you know, what I don't know anymore because I haven't been in there for, you know, a little while. But, you know, Gabe would be in there. People would just, you know, and of course Phil. But Phil usually, when I was training there, was training later to try to get some pride. Privacy. But I told you that story, Scott. I turned around, I saw only hamstrings and calves on the leg curl machine.
Yeah.
Because the stack was, you know, basically, camouflaging who it was, and I'm like, who the fuck is it? And then I'm like, what the hamster? And I'm like, oh, duh. And I laugh to myself, oh, it's just Phil and his retarded fucking hamstrings and calves.
I can only imagine, man.
Holy shit.
So, Dylan, that brings me to another question. This is from Louis Zito. He asks, could you give us some advice on opening a gym, how to be successful, and what to avoid?
Yeah, you know, I get that question a lot. I get that emailed to me more times than I can even say. And my advice is, like, with a gym, you've got to be, like, really passionate about it. You can't be like thinking, unless you got like this corporate money and all this corporate planning, you know, you can't go in there thinking dollars and cents. You got to go in there and think, I'm going to have to bust my ass to keep this place open. I got to be passionate about it. I got to love getting up at 5 a.m. every day to come in here and then leave probably 10 o'clock at night during the week or whatever. You know, you got to be ready to be married to it. It's like that really good piece of pussy you got once, you know, and you're just willing to give up all your life for it. That's my best, because, you know, that's how I treated it. You know, I was like, I didn't have any money when I came here. I was rubbing two nickels together, you know, and I had to make it work. I was using personal training money to carry it. And, you know, I just, worked my ass off and treated people right and was friendly, helpful. You know, you can't be an asshole bodybuilder, you know, that doesn't talk to anybody or pissed off dieting. You've got to bring your A game every day and be the electricity of the place.
Right. You know, we had Brett Wilkin on the other week after he had won at Junior Nationals. And he had told us the whole story about how, you know, he and Ivana are moving out there. And one of the big reasons is, well, he's excited because he's going to be training with Adam. And that will give Ivana Ivusic, who's your client, an opportunity to work with you in person on a more regular basis. So we've talked about your bodybuilding. We've talked about the gym, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that. But tell us a little bit about your coaching.
Brett and Ivana, they're really, really cool couple, really cool people. I just met them this past year. I trained Candace Carter, you know, who's the recent Miss International figure competitor. And Candace was actually put Ivana and I in touch with one another because Ivana was interested in my coaching. And, you know, we text back and forth a little bit, finally talked, and we kind of like had a good, like, you know, just coach client rapport, and we decided to, you know, go for it and see what we can do with her this year at the Olympia. But my coaching is I don't know, like I said, I like working with athletes that are serious about, you know, wanting to win, that, you know, they take it serious, because then it's more fun that way. You're both on the same page. If you're sitting there begging somebody to diet or just sitting there saying, oh, you got to hang in there, that's just no fun to me. So, you know, I like working with motivated athletes, and that's about where it's at for me as far as coaching. Otherwise, I just have no interest in doing it. I, you know, work on the gym. I have a great clientele. I train in the gym, and, you know, I'm not one of those guys that sits there and says, oh, I need to have 100 or 300 clients a year. I want to take what I can in a workload and have some motivated people I can work with.
Hmm. And you work with a lot of females, correct?
Yeah, I think I'm better with working with females just because I just know their bodies more. You know, I used to have to help my ex-wife all the time in female bodybuilding when we were married, prepping her. So I just tended to, you know, get really good at it and understand how the female body works. And that's just kind of where it all started back then, and turned number of women pro since then, worked with I still work with Alina Popa, who's making a comeback this year. She's a top, you know, top Olympian, top two pro bodybuilder. Candace Carter, Ivana, and, you know, a few national level competitors, but that's about, you know, the legits of it. and then help Adam out a little bit.
What's the difference? And this is something I'd like to get your input on, Skip, too, because you know there is some differences in between working with males and females. And I feel like as a coach myself, it's kind of hard to answer that question. But if we could try, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on how working with a female athlete is different than working with males.
It's not really that different, except for the fact of, you know, the food, the calories, the supplementation's a lot different. But and you know, I think men, especially when you get into the bigger, heavier men, those are the hardest people to work with, because you know, you're dealing with a lot of muscle, and when a lot of muscle flattens out, you know, it can take a lot to fill it out. And it can, you know, it's just you're dealing with a lot more food, and you have to deal with distended stomachs and stuff like that. Where women, you know, you're just dealing with basically, you know, you're still doing bodybuilding in a sense. You're creating art. You know, you got to be full, but you don't have to be. You know, it's not all these crazy muscle bellies that need to be filled. And you know, the guys are just crazy nowadays.
That's what you mean. Yeah. What are your thoughts, Skip?
Yeah, I agree. You know, I agree with Dylan. I think the only other thing that stands out is, you know, the bigger guys tend to struggle more with the scale than women do.
Really?
They don't like, yeah, it's been my experience that you just can't stand, you know, when you get into the, especially when you get into the supers, they just don't like to see that scale come down. And a lot of times they think they're better conditioned than they actually are, because they get caught up in the numbers game quite a bit. And it's funny because you would think, you know, some of the listeners might be thinking, well, that's usually a female thing. It's a female thing with the scale until you get to that upper echelon. And when you start to get into the elite athletes, the elite female bodybuilders, or the elite female competitors, they don't care as much about the scale. I think they're more concerned with the look. And I think that's where, you know, Dylan touched on with the distension and everything else. The game has changed so much. Well, it's changed so much that it's created new divisions that aren't as ugly. And I think that once now, when you get into true bodybuilding, it's just a chase. It's just a, you know, this infinite, this forever chase of size. And it's really killing I don't want to say it's killing the sport, but it's killing the look. And, you know, bodybuilders are the first to, you know, disparage the new divisions and everything else, but they've created those new divisions by how they have pursued this mass at all costs. And it's ruined a lot of physiques. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of bodybuilders switching over, you know, to the classic and things like that, because they have a better look, and they're not going to be competitive with the basically the freak zone that is, you know, pure men's bodybuilding right now.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, Skip. And I also think people nowadays are even more, I think, I'd like to think anyway, people are more responsible with their health. And you know, let's face it, being a big 300-pound bodybuilder isn't the most healthy thing in the world to do anymore nowadays.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. So we can't do this show, we can't talk about Armbrust Pro Gym without talking about Phil. I did have one Phil question, but that's what I'm going to limit it to. And this is from Ellis Quarterman, and he says, lots of people talk about how Phil doesn't train hard, but I've definitely seen videos of him doing some good weight and going all out. The question is, for the most part, does Phil train as hard as he could?
Yeah, I know, yeah. Right? It's a difficult question to answer.
I get that friends with him. I mean, like, you know, I've trained with Phil a few times, and, you know, I walked with him. The workout's getting a great workout. That, you know, maybe sometimes he comes in the gym. I've seen plenty of bodybuilders come in the gym and just go through the movements and stuff. But I think, you know, after Ronnie Coleman, everybody expects every bodybuilder in the world, or every Mr. Olympian from now on, needs to train like Ronnie Coleman. And, you know, I don't think that's the case. I think Phil trains very smart. He trains hard. I've seen him move around some weights I never dreamed of moving around, and I was a pretty strong guy in my time. So I would say, yeah, he trains hard. Does he, you know, does he do the unbelievable Ronnie Coleman stuff? Probably not. But, you know, hey, he's a seven-time Mr. Olympian. He's got a freakish body, so he, you know, you can't knock on the guy. He knows what he's doing. And, yeah, I would say he trains smart and hard.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I think that I think he trains as hard as he needs to.
Right.
And I think a lot of people, you know, are quick to disparage the guy for that. But he also has remained relatively injury-free for the large part of his career. He doesn't, you know, he's not going to walk away needing or being in the situation that Ronnie was or Dorian Yates was with all these massive injuries and muscle tears. And, you know, I know Phil got good advice from, how I lost that, I'm not sure, but he got good advice from Jay. Basically saying you don't need to throw around those big weights. You're in it for the long haul. Hmm. And I think the fact that he's remained injury free, doesn't have the physical, obviously he had the hernia issue, but that's typical. I mean, you know, a lot of people have hernia issues, whether they're elite bodybuilders or not. So, you know, he hasn't had anything torn that I'm aware of. He hasn't had any major setbacks. And, you know, he at this point, and, you know, Dylan, correct me if I'm wrong, but the guy could pretty much win until doesn't want to win anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like, you know, maybe I'm a little by, you know, I'm more partial, but I don't see anybody beating him. I don't see anybody coming up that's exciting at all in the open bodybuilding. There's no up and comers. I mean, I agree. That's, you know, Phil's brought that, the freakiest, you know, physique as far as having that freakiness, that 3D, that pretty, he brings it all. And, you know, it's going to take somebody with a lot of talent, like, you know, a little Derek Lunsford, you know, I'm excited about him, but he's not an open bodybuilder. You know, I think he's going to smash the 212s, but there's nobody like that in the open that's, you know, coming up that to really be that excited about.
Yep.
Do you feel like the other divisions, like maybe Classic Physique, are allowing people to get competitive and not have to push for that mass? Do you feel that? I mean, I've heard some people say that that's a contributing factor to kind of thinning bodybuilding out. Yeah,
I think, you know, I think people are going to make that choice to go, hey, you know, I like my small waist, you know, and so do the girls, you know. I mean, I don't know how many girls out there really like that 300 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, I gotta fucking eat and shit every 3 hours. Look, you know,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, it's, you know, back in the day, like when we started, you know, it was all about, you know, there was Bob Paris, there was you know, Lee Haney, there was Barry DeMay, and that's the kind of physiques I think, you know, a lot of people are kind of leaning towards nowadays.
Yeah, I agree.
So this question is from Cornelius Parkin over on Instagram, and he asks, he says he owns a bodybuilding gym, and it's amazing to see the variance in training intensities that people have. Who's the most intense person that you've seen train in your gym?
Most intense? Boy, the most intense guy I saw train was, I can't believe he was here last year. He's that crazy military guy that just does tons of reps with heavy weight. He's kind of like, almost like, looks kind of Spanish, but Asian in a way. I don't know if you guys know who he is. But yeah, I saw him like deadlift 405 for like 37 times or something like that. It was crazy. Wow. And he was just screaming and sweat was coming out of his ears and everything else. I was just like, wow. Yeah, but that was the most intense person I've ever seen. I mean, on a daily basis, I think, you know, probably Adam's up there, Heather Grace is up there. They push the weights and very little rest and get after it.
It's badass. From UC Suma, Matt Marshall, he asks, what are some of the common mistakes that you see trainees making during their pre-contest?
Relying on supplements too much.
Yeah. We talk about that a lot, Skip, don't we?
Oh, yeah, we do.
Yeah, not enough. You know, they need to focus more on eating and nutrition.
Fair enough. And he also asks, if you can think of one offhand, What's one of the funniest stories that you've seen running your gym?
Honestly, like, I don't know, seeing people getting shot off the back end of the treadmill and they're not paying attention, you know, and the treadmill's going fast. There's a few occasions with those. And I can't help but to, like, just run back to the office and roll around on the floor and laugh my ass off.
Okay, I see the videos, you know, on YouTube and stuff, but how common is that? Like, is that a weekly thing or what are we talking here?
No, you get one, you know, a few funny things a year for sure.
A few chuckles a year.
Yeah, I've seen a guy doing squats. This was caught on the camera because it freaked out, but he was squatting and he just had awful form. And he was coming up in the middle of his like third rep and just passed out in the middle of the squat. And just, it was pretty ugly, but miraculously he was, you know, okay after he woke up. I mean, wow. He passed out from, you know, holding his breath too long in a squat. Wow. Yeah, you just see all kinds of crazy things, but it can be scary at times, but funny.
All right. I've got another question from Gabe. He says, "Hey Dylan, it's Gabe from your gym. Thanks for creating the best gym I've ever stepped foot in." And this is kind of a big all-encompassing question, so feel free to pick out any pieces you'd like to talk about. He says, "What advice would you give an up-and-coming 21-year-old bodybuilder / classic competitor in terms of training, nutrition, supplements, and gear? What would you have done differently if you were to do it all over again?"
First of all, thanks for the compliment on the gym, Gabe. And I would just look for somebody that's knowledgeable. And, you know, anybody that's around, that, you know, do your research on the internet and just ask them questions. You know, ask them to be your tutor. Ask them, you know, what you can, whatever. But the worst thing you can do is just listen to free advice in the gym.
Yeah.
Especially the young kids, you want to ask older guys, you know, because, you know, older guys that are in their like late 30s, even, you know, early 40s, those are the guys that already gone down that road and they've made the mistakes, they've learned from them, they've, you know, they've learned from the things they did right. And so ask those guys. When you see somebody that's young, it, you know, maybe just put on 3 inches on his arm in 1 year, don't ask him how, because, you know, he probably didn't do it in a very smart way.
Well, yeah, fair enough. So, and I've got another one. This is from Steadfast Sarah. She asks, "What are some of the greatest challenges and greatest rewards of running a multifaceted facility like Armbrust Pro Gym?"
You know, it's the facets, I guess, are, you know, any business is vulnerable. You know, anything can happen at any time. So, you got to stay on your toes and just make sure your customer service and everything's good and make sure your machines are running healthy. And especially in a like gym business where everything's so, you know, corporate nowadays, you go down the street either way from this gym and you can find a nice big corporate gym, you know, that's whatever. But, you know, we got a niche and we just, I think, you know, it's just keeping on top of things. And the luxuries are, you know, hey, I get to come to the gym every day. I wouldn't want to do anything else. So I'm good. I'm 47 years old and I still want to come to the gym every day. So I'm cool.
Yeah. I got to get my 2 cents in here too. And I got to tell you, I've seen that vacuum on strapped on Dylan's back numerous times. And you have the atmosphere, you have all that, but it is the cleanest gym that I've ever trained in, and I've trained for over 30 years. The mopping every night, the vacuuming, the changes that they've made to bathrooms to make them bigger, nicer, showers, everything. And Dylan will attest to this, and he knows more about this than I do. I've been around for a long time, but I haven't run any garage gyms. But I know the garage, and when I say garage gyms, I basically mean the non-corporate 24-hour fitnesses and things like that, that basically just own the industry. It is difficult to make money with a garage gym. You have to have a niche, and APG has that niche. Without it, Dylan, you'd probably be training 300 people a year because you need to make money to be able to make them trips to Mexico.
That's true. That's a good point there. So yeah,
there's just a lot of attention. You know, you're talking about being personable and things. I haven't had, and I was in Denver for a long time. I haven't heard one person ever say a bad word about you. Okay, one person, but you were divorcing her. So that is kind of, that might, you know, that's going to happen. But yeah, really, you're well-liked by everybody. The attention to detail, the gym, and I think that that's probably the best formula that you have to have it to try to make money with a garage gym. And then of course, you have the niche. So it's just a... and you know, it was Harry's Pro before, right?
Yeah, it was Colorado Harry's Pro Gym.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because I had heard about it, but I was never over there. So right. Yeah, you took something that was, you know, and I don't want to say this in any way to seem disrespectful to Harry, but it was just a regular average fledgling gym, and you just, holy shit, built it into this monstrosity that is very incredibly well known now in the bodybuilding industry. So, it's good.
I appreciate it. Yeah. You have to love it. You gotta baby it. You gotta cater it. You gotta pet it. You gotta do all the things, you know, you gotta treat it like you want it to run. You gotta treat it good. So, that's just been my philosophy. I never went to any like business school or anything like that. I did learn how to run businesses by working for different gym owners through the year, different business owners. So, you know, I kind of got the black market business degree, but it still works. So it's all good.
Hey guys, since we have a few minutes left here, I'm going to try to shift gears a little bit and get into the stuff that we really love, and that's bodybuilding. Because we have a whole slew of questions. Skip and I will try to get to some a little bit later if we get a chance. I still have to hear about your story about coming back to life, Skip, and hear about how you're doing and how health is going. But over at the Advices Radio message board, you know, we have a thread. It's in the bodybuilding section. There's threads for all the shows, stickied at the top. This one for Blood, Sweat, and Gear. You guys can submit your questions there, and we pretty much knock out all of them in between for each show. This question is from Ian Helling, who I just had an opportunity to meet. He was a middleweight at Junior Nationals this past couple weeks ago. And he asks us, he says he's only done 3 shows. Last year, he was 100% natural, and he noticed that he had much tighter legs and striations were more noticeable in the quads. This year, he says, I saw I was able to keep a hard upper body with great detail by keeping more carbs in the diet 2 weeks out from the show. And coach didn't want him to cut too early as he felt he might lose muscle and come in too small. He says, I seem to hold water in the lower extremities. Would keto or very low carb be something to look into leading into the next show next year? How can I address this water in just the lower extremities without screwing up my upper body? Is this through diet? Thanks, guys. Dylan, do you have any thoughts on this one?
You know, I don't know. If he's eating a lot of carbs, he's probably mistaken his hardness for fullness maybe in the first point. But a little bit of water, you know, just that's why you do the water loading and, you know, maybe a over-the-counter light diuretic, you know, what do they call that stuff? Expel, something like that.
Yeah.
Run that for like a week. That could probably take care of a lot of that unwanted water.
All right. I think what he's saying too, and Skip, tell me if you're following this. I'm just trying to read into it a little bit. Is he saying here that he's afraid he'll lose the fullness up top? I guess we'd have to really see him to know, but is it just that he's holding water in his legs only? I guess that would be the only thing to do. I guess a trial run. Do you ever do trial runs with people, Dylan?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll do like if somebody's in shape right away, I do like a trial carb deplete maybe 3 weeks before, 2 weeks before, just because I think the more you run that process, the better shape you get in.
That makes sense. You got any thoughts on this one, Skip?
Yeah, I think, you know, and it's, I'm being presumptive because I don't know exactly what he means, but it sounds like he's concerned that he needs to change his diet to get his legs harder, and he's concerned that he's going to lose size or fullness, or like most people say, lose muscle in his upper body, because his upper body is probably ready. I would say if he shifted from natural to enhanced, there's it's a hormone. There's probably estrogen kickback that he's probably not managing as well as he should be. But again, you know, it's my best guess given the information that we have. I would probably look at the, you know, the estrogen control first. And, you know, is it water or is he just not lean enough? You know, that's, you know, and I say that because if it's truly water, then it could be hormone related. But a lot of people mistake, you know, water for just not being lean enough.
Sure.
Not being
conditioned. Especially in legs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a good point. Another question. This is from Big Rook, and then we'll wrap up from here with Dylan. He says, multiple shows during an open bodybuilding season. What do you think is a good time frame between shows?
I would say, you know, anywhere from a week to 3 weeks.
Okay.
I'm right there with you. I completely agree.
Well, what do you guys think would be like, what's the outside? Let me ask you that. Like if you were to do one show, how long would you think is like the absolute longest you would want to wait before it was just kind of just overkill on the waiting game?
I don't know. It depends. Like if you're with a pro and you got to qualify for the Olympia, then you really don't got much choice.
Right.
When you're chasing those points, you don't have a choice. But if you're just doing like local shows and or, you know, national shows, I would say, you know, maybe 5 to 6 weeks.
Okay. And, you know, he further down, and I know we can't give him an exact answer on this. He says, how do you plan to peak and then peak again 2 weeks later? If I can throw my two cents in, I feel like I would personally want to try to do as little as possible that first peak to hopefully not upset, you know, water balance and stuff too much, so that we don't really have to make too many drastic changes that second time. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. A couple weeks apart. I mean, you know, you can get pretty damn close to your peak and duplicate that in a couple weeks. I think the worst time frame is once you get to that 6 week. If you're longer than 6 weeks, then you can kind of back off a little bit, let the body rest for a week or two, a little bit, and then you can push forward. If you're at that 5 or 6 week mark, you're just, you know, you got to keep that shit tight as hell, and the body will start to fight. It's a real rough time frame to have to peak that 5-6 weeks apart. A week or two, even 3 weeks, I think that's the best, because you're still geared down psychologically. You know, it's easier, I think, to get it done. And you start to get into that 5 and 6 weeks, you're not able to back off, and you just got to push through, and it can be rough. Your immune system takes a shitter. It's in the shitter usually after our first show anyway. So you got to be careful too, to not come off of those shows and be sick and then have to battle with some shit like that when you have to turn around and peak again.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. This is where I like working with women, because it's easier to, I think as women do more shows, because you're not dealing with, you know, tons of muscle mass on like a professional bodybuilder frame. Women tend to, you know, you can keep them. They tend to get actually better show to show.
Right.
That's just my experience. So, you know, you saw like Candace Carter this year when she won the Miss International in Columbus. 3 weeks later, she was even better in Australia. And that was after an 18-hour flight. So,
yeah,
you know, I think it's just easier to balance with less muscle and, in a woman than some bodybuilder guy that's, you know, 225 pounds and up. It's a lot of muscles. It's hard to manage. It's very, very, you know, you're just dealing with a lot more muscle, a lot more calories, a lot more everything.
Right on. Well, I have another radio show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, and my co-host, my partner on that show, VJ Peary, he is going to be out in Colorado, I think in the next couple of weeks. He told me he's going to stop by, so I can't wait to hear what he has to say about the place. If anybody else wants to come out, how can they find the gym?
Yeah, of course. We're in Wheat Ridge, Colorado. It's 4240 Kipling Street, Wheat Ridge, Colorado. The zip is 80033, and our phone number is 303-456-0076, and our website is armbreastprogym.com.
That's awesome. Do you have anything else, Skip?
Yeah, I want to make sure that Dylan does me a huge favor at some point in the next week or two. If you can get to Snooze and eat a double order of sweet potato pancakes for me, and just send me a picture. That. I'm missing them everybody. Something fierce.
Yeah, we need to catch up on how you're doing and stuff too, so let's catch up.
Definitely. Definitely. Okay. It's good having you on. It's good talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, you guys. I appreciate it, and it was great talking to both of you.
Man, it's our pleasure. My pleasure, definitely, man. You're welcome back anytime. Good luck with all your clients this year, and I'll look forward to seeing how they do.
All right, thank you.
All right, guys, that's been Dylan Armbrust from Armbrust Pro Gym. Skip, how did we do?
He's a good dude. He's a solid dude. He's wrapped up in the industry and about as immersed as you can be, and he's still very humble, very personable, just very easy to get along with. You know how the industry kind of chews people up, turns them into narcissistic dickheads.
Like you.
Basically.
Basically.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Like me.
I'm teasing.
You know what? Honestly, I was there. And I think that's why it bothers me. And I try to, you know, tell people, don't let it chew you up. And before you know it, most people get chewed up by it. So he's just a solid dude. He knows that he needs to try to stay out of the drama that is in, you know, competitor gyms with everybody sleeping with everybody and everybody pissed off at everybody. I've seen fist fights in there. It doesn't happen very often, but the shit, you know, people come to blows over who's banging who. And it when you get a lot of competitors like that together, shit like that can happen. You got a lot of ego. You got a lot of, you know, selfish people, and you got a lot of good people in there too. So, you know, it's just this big potpourri bodybuilding.
Well, he's a stand-up dude. I'm really glad to have had him. What do you say we take a quick commercial break and come back, and I want to catch up with you and see what's been going on.
Team Skip has been synonymous with bodybuilding conditioning for the last two decades. From NFL players to professional bodybuilders to 40-something guys that just want to kill it in the gym and their shirt sleeves. If you have too much skin, call Skip. TeamSkip.com, because skin is overrated.
Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy.
All right, guys, and we are back. Scott McNally with Skip Hill. That's the new thing I like to do for your voice. I don't know why.
I like that.
Or with my voice for your name. Yeah. I don't know why I want to do that, but I do. Team Skip, something like that. I'm not a singer, as you can tell. That was awesome, man. So you've trained at that gym a bunch in your day. That place just seems so cool. I want to make a road trip today, basically, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's difficult to explain when you're there and it's peak hours or you're there on the weekend when it's leg day, you'll get what I'm saying. It's just that electricity. It's just the atmosphere, and it's ineffable. Yeah. You know, there aren't, I can't describe it. You have to be there. Now, if you're there at off times and stuff, you're not going to get, you know, too much out. But when it's banging in there and the music is fucking kick ass and the old school plates and you hear the plates clanging, they're not rubber coated plates and they're all mismatched and it's cool.
That's badass, man. Yep. So you got to catch me up. I had a bunch of people, you know, before we did the recording for that special release episode last week, I had a bunch of people asking me, you know, texting and DMing and PMing and instant messaging. Hey, what's going on with Skip? Is he okay? And I had very few details. So I said, most people, I just didn't even answer because I didn't have enough time in the day to respond to all that. You know what I mean? But I knew we were putting the show together. We got it out on Friday. Hopefully that gave a lot of people information. But I want to hear an update because I got a text from S2H saying that he fixed you, that you're fixed.
he most certainly, you know, helped considerably. First, I have to say that I do appreciate, because I'm in the same boat you are. I've been getting so many messages that I can't keep up with them. I'm also getting a lot of people who, you know, with the best of intentions, and I want to say I really, really do appreciate it. But I'm getting a lot of people who are in the medical field, who are, you know, giving advice and stuff, and I appreciate that. The problem that I run into is I can't use all the advice, you know, that I get. And I'm trying to be careful when I respond because I don't want anybody to think that I don't appreciate the feedback, the concern, people taking the time to be, you know, to hit me up and want to help. I do really, I'm flattered, huge. At the same time, you know, I do have a couple people that are close to me that I trust that are in the medical field that I have been taking you know, advice from since the first time that it happened about a little over a month ago. And I am, you know, staying with that advice and they're helping me tremendously. S2H did give me something that I was considering. And when he gave me the information, it backed up how I felt. So I was like, cool. And it has helped. I was already progressing. You know, when did we record that? On Wednesday, I think.
Yes.
And it went up on Friday. So Wednesday I started to turn where I was actually starting to move the water. What had happened was it was twofold. You know, I've been dieting hard and I'm depleted. So I would start to move water when I would push water. And then I'm ravenously hungry, so I would have to eat something. I was keeping the eating controlled, but as soon as I would eat something, then I would start to hold the water again. Now, the cramping subsided. I haven't had any cramping since, I think, Tuesday. So that was a big turning point there. But, you know, it's been difficult because I know that when I eat that I'm going to hold a little bit of water and I can't eat a bunch of carbs or a lot of sodium because this is just a massive electrolyte issue. In fact, I've had a few other people back up what the people close to me are telling me, and they're saying that they don't think it's gear related at all, and they're not even in the bodybuilding industry.
Interesting.
Which typically when people are in the medical field and they're not in the bodybuilding industry, we all know how that goes, and everything that ever will happen to you in your entire lifetime is related to gear, and you're going to kill yourself. So I'm in a much better spot physically. I don't know about psychologically. I'm still pretty beat up and defeated. At the same time, I am going back in the gym today to throw around some lightweight, get a pump. I'm retardedly full. I can't even get my hand, you know, to the back of my head, you know, to wash the back of my neck without feeling like I've just done, you know, 20 sets of buys, which is kind of nice. So I'm going to take advantage of that. I did my cardio this morning. I'm just going to see how it goes. I'm not going to go in and start ripping the gym apart, but I think getting in there and moving and sweating, you know, I do have a cough, which when I was doing cardio, because my body temperature came up, I felt so much better. So I think, you know, I've been sedentary for a week. I haven't done anything other than try to push this water off. So I do have a couple veins in my ankles now where that didn't happen before. I do anticipate that as I get into the training and the cardio, now that I'm, you know, eating clean and I'm basically going back on my diet, at least for this week, to just get this water off to see how tight I am. And moving forward, my plan, if you know, my body's going to allow me, is to, I want to continue to get lean. I'm not in prep mode. I'm switching over to TRT pretty much effective immediately, instead of just, you know, coming off of everything and crashing and having horrible hormone levels and everything else. And what I'll do is I'll run the TRT anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks. I'm going to get blood work, make sure that my kidneys are good and that they're not beat up. And that's going to happen this week. I just feel, like I say, physically a lot better. But I'll know more when I get out of the gym tonight after training chest and shoulders. I expected to come off of the elliptical breathing like a, you know, fat slob. And yeah, that really didn't happen. I monitored my heart rate and I was like, wow, I feel pretty good. You know, my best guess, again, it's all a guessing game at this point because I don't have, you know, the lab work. I don't have anything, you know, definitive. You know, I'm training twice a day. I'm doing cardio twice a day. I'm sweating so much that I wring out my shirt when I'm done. And it's like I just got done using a sponge, you know, washing my car. It's such a massive amount of fluid that I'm losing twice a day that it's just eating up my minerals. They're so fucked up and out of balance that, you know, I think that that's probably the bigger issue. Now, whether my kidneys, you know, if my kidney numbers come back and they're off, then obviously that would, you know, be exacerbating the issue. So I'm a little bit anxious about that. But at the same time, I think if my kidney numbers were still shitty, I wouldn't be clearing water like I am now either. So this week is going to tell quite a bit. Getting back into the gym, doing the cardio, cleaning up the diet, even though I wasn't eating much last week. You know, I'll be honest, when I did eat something, it would be, you know, last night I had some barbecue. I was careful to not throw down, you know, any sausage or anything heavy on sodium. But I had a little bit of barbecue. I had some potato salad and stuff and made sure that I pushed water. And I felt pretty good. And I didn't gain any edema or any water weight in my ankles from that. So, you know, I'm certainly heading in the right direction. And this is important. People may be thinking, because I've gotten a few messages saying, you know, well, what if you come off this week and you're good? You know, you could still finish the prep. Don't think that hasn't crossed my mind. The problem is this. If I'm having these problems on a daily basis and they've happened 4 or 5 weeks apart, to go into peak week and try to load, you know, I have to be full, even if I load clean, and I have problems when I go to manipulate water,
yeah,
it would be, it could be potentially just fucking disastrous.
Yeah.
So as much as I have considered it, it would just be a horrible, horrible idea.
Fair enough. I hate to see your prep come to an end, but I get it. I get where you're at. And I guess it's the grown-up thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, well, and that's the other part, because being a grown-up sucks, but at least I get to live a little longer.
I got a question for you. And this is something a friend of mine and listener, Andrea Watson, had posed to me. and it was something I had kind of been thinking too. Skip, you ever think about hiring somebody else to run your prep for you? Because here's the reason I say that, because I think that you overworked yourself and you did more than you needed to. I wonder if you couldn't have gotten away with this not happening. Cause I know that you were pushing so hard. I feel like if you had somebody there to tell you, hey buddy, you know, you don't need to do that. You know, we that's what we need the outside eyes for. That's the way I feel. And I think, I know that you would say that to me too. So what are your thoughts?
I would say, if I'm being completely honest, that this was the first time in all of my preps and in all of my bodybuilding, and I hate to say career because it's not a fucking career, but my bodybuilding journey.
That's just as bad.
Yeah, I know, right? I would say that I did consider that I fucked myself over by overreaching, and that if I did have somebody who was calling the shots, it is very possible that I wouldn't have had these issues. So it has made me, if I were to do it in the future, I would say this. I would definitely do TRT. I will not go back to being gassed. Yeah. I didn't gain enough from doing it to as far as cost to benefit for the risk and that sort of thing. So I would go TRT, and I may well hand it over to somebody else, either completely, which would be difficult because I've always prided myself on making my own calls. It's just something that I have loved about the process. I'm in total control. Yet at the same time, this is the first time that I have overreached. And when I say overreached, it's probably a gross understatement. So yeah, it's a very good question, and it is something that I have considered. Not only would I have had the problems, and may not have, because someone would have, you know, reined me back in or pulled me back in. But, you know, hindsight's, you know, 2020. So I just don't know. Right now, I'm still in a position where psychologically I'm not in a great place, but I do know moving forward, if I can get through this week and things look good and my labs come back and they're good, I will press forward and change some things and pull back, which I've already begun doing, and really kind of see, without getting on stage, if I'm going to have a better look, if I'm going to continue to get leaner, if I just basically see how I'm going to respond. I'm going to put, first thing is I'm putting carbs back in. I've never done a prep without carbs. And to go from such a depleted, overly depleted state to then loading, you know, I've had questions about that too, because I've had to load so much more. But I will remind people, because a lot of the messages I got, not all of them, but a lot of them, were questioning the loading. I had the water and the edema when I got depleted. That's when it started. It would start 2 to 3 days before I loaded. Now, anytime I load, anytime anybody loads, you gain water weight and then you get rid of it in 2 or 3 days.
Sure.
And, you know, that's just part of the process. The problem this time was I was already having those issues when I was so depleted that they were exacerbated when I was, you know, when I would load. But the real problem wasn't the water from the loading. The real problem was the fact that I was starting to hold water when I was depleted, not when I was loading. And it's important that I reiterate that.
Fair enough. Yeah, Scott thought, he said, he's like, he thought that it was the two-a-days were his thought.
Yeah, and I can't deny that that's not the case. You know, a lot of people said, what about the climate change? I'm like, well, whatever. I mean, I sweat when I'm in, you know, Armbrist Pro Gym, when there's, you know, the garage doors are open and there's no air conditioning. There's air conditioning down here.
Yeah.
So, but I can't deny the fact that I'm losing so much more water this time that I don't know what part the climate played. It could simply be just the frequency. It could be the intensity. It could be the, you know, much higher volume. It could be the fact that I am so depleted because I'm not running carbs and I'm stretching out my loading instead of loading every week like I always have to 10 to 14 days. And people can say, well, that's not a big difference. Yeah, it is. It is when you factor in the higher volume, the higher frequency, the sweating, and, you know, I'm probably not, even if I'm replacing the fluid, the minerals aren't there.
Wow.
The mineral balance got so fucked up. I mean, you know, I keep telling myself, I was walking downstairs and cramping so violently through my quads and my hips and my glutes that that's just not fucking normal.
No, not at all.
So to have it happen once is one thing, but 5 weeks later to have it happen again, that was the, you know, alarming part. So,
and like you said too, hindsight's 20/20. It's easy for me to say, hey, you know, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? But you know, I understand, you know, where you're at, and you know, you obviously have done this for a long time, quite successfully, you know, as you've done it. So it's I can understand where you're coming from, man. I'm glad to hear that things are a little bit better, and I'm glad to to hear that you're feeling better too, man, because I know you were really down. You were really
bummed. And you know, I'm still defeated and I'm still disappointed, but psychologically, I do have to admit, I'm in a much better position than I was last week. I know that I can figure this out. You brought this up and I appreciate this. I will get it figured out. I will figure out moving forward, because in my brain, I'm not done. I might be done gassing. I might be done with this ridiculous frequency, but now I can pull back and I can try to tweak and fuck with things and while pulling back and see. Because one of the things that stood out to me too, while I had plenty of time to ponder everything this last week while I wasn't training and doing two-a-days and everything else, was I was getting really, really lean on little to no cardio. So I have to question even the addition of the cardio, how much, and I've been going back through my detailed notes and records, how much I really was progressing with the amount of cardio that I was adding in. I was progressing, but that could have also been from just the two-a-days for training, because that can add substantially, you know, metabolically too. So, you know, I pulled back my cardio. I pulled back my training frequency. I'm only going to train 4 days a week. I'm only going to train one session, and I'm going to do my cardio only for a 30-minute session early in the day, and I'm adding in carbs. So we'll see what happens. You know, it's very possible that I'm going to get the labs back, and they're going to be fine. Hmm. You know, yeah. I'm not, you know, I am anxious, but at the same time, I know it's very possible that could happen, and that would only solidify the fact that I was overreaching and pretty much caused all my own problems. There's no other way to, you know, other way to put it. If I get labs back that are bad, then that's a different story. Then I've got to look and go, well, you know, what the fuck? And then look back to, you know, figuring out why are my kidney values bad? And that would lend itself more to the gear end. So we'll see.
Yeah, that makes sense, man. And that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that it was just something, you know, something you overdid versus it being some type of like that would be a best case, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's also part of the reason, because I didn't get a lot, but I had some people beating me up a little bit saying, get those labs done now, get them done now, get them done now. There's no need. I'm trying to get rid of the water right now. Do I need to know that right now that if my kidneys values are bad, once I move this water, then they were really bad. You know, if I would have had it done and been like, you know, oh my God, my kidney levels are bad, a week later they could have been fine, because if my minerals are all fucked up and I'm holding water, my kidney values probably weren't going to be good at that time.
Yeah.
They were going to be affected to some degree. So then the guessing game would become, I got to get blood work in another week or two anyway to see if I have progressed. So this week, I'm probably going to get them done on Wednesday.
Okay.
Simply because I have, you know, that time on Wednesday, and I've already got everything's already in place.
And as a lot of you guys know, we record this on Monday, comes out Thursday. So you'll probably get it toward the end of the week or early next week.
Sure. And my coach log, you know, I'll make sure that I, you know, continue to update what's going on, you know, through my Elite FTS coach logs and on Intense Muscles. So, you know, I'll have an update tonight for my coach log based on how the training went. I think you know, if I go to the gym and I'm weak as fuck, that's a pretty bad sign, because I'm not holding any water right now. So, you know, peeing like crazy, I have to be careful that, you know, as I drop even more water, I'm not holding the water that I was holding, but I'm still holding water from, you know, not training, not being on my diet like I was, you know, right up until last week. So, you know, it's going to say quite a bit.
Can I, off topic, can I tell you a little bit about Junior Nationals, or not Junior Absolutely. Nationals, about Chicago Pro? And I don't even want to talk about the show. I don't even want to tell you about everything, how that went. I want to tell you about the food.
Nice.
Because I actually did some good food this time. We found a little mom and pop style pizza place. And
in Chicago too. Nice.
Yeah. We did the Chicago deep dish.
Oh, beautiful.
Skip, I could only eat two pieces of that thing.
I can't find it down here because everybody down here is from fucking New York and New Jersey. So everything is New York style. I am dying. I've been fiending for a deep dish and I cannot get one down here. Not even in Miami.
Wow.
So how was it?
Oh, man. It was the first time I ever had it.
Oh, man.
It was out of this world. I'm going to tell you. Plus, the place was so cool. Like when I was a little kid, when we'd go out to eat, we'd go out to like little family restaurants and stuff. And it was the kind of place where if you ordered a soda, they'd bring you like a pitcher. And that, like, you know, your parents had a pitcher of beer and the kids had a pitcher of soda. And, you know, just in this place, like it hasn't been updated. Like I'm sure that if I was a kid in Chicago and my parents had taken me there, that they haven't updated the place since then. And like the same people worked there too. You know, it was really cool. It was very like, it was everything I could expect for like an authentic old school place, you know, old wooden booths that kind of creaked and stuff.
Nice.
Just out of this world, man. I can't even describe how good this pizza was. And like I said, filling too. It's just, like I said, I could only eat two slices.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, was the crust real heavy and oily?
No, that was the thing. Which was interesting because, you know, we have deep dish pizza around here. It's not Chicago style, but you could put some of that pizza on like a napkin and it would just soak through 10 napkins and into your couch. Right. If you set it there, this, you know, it had some oil in it. You know, it had the cheese, like thick mozzarella cheese, but it wasn't like a greasy pizza, which was odd to me. It was good.
Nope. Sounds good. I cannot get it here.
I got pictures.
Here's my food find this weekend.
Okay.
Anybody who's older, you might remember these. I'm not sure. But the old Hostess fruit pies. Did you eat those when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Terrible, okay. But delicious. Yeah.
They're difficult. Oh, yeah. They're just nutritionally, they're fucking rotten. Now, they changed them. It's kind of like the old honey bun. As soon as they sold to Little Debbie, it's different. It's not the same. And it's like, oh, man, it's not even worth eating anymore. I found that Krispy Kreme, of all places, makes small. They have a box of six small, and they call them apple tarts. And I thought, oh, I'll just get they're fucking insane, and they're just like the old apple pie Hostess fruit pies, and they are fucking insane. They're off the charts awesome.
No
so
kidding.
If anybody old school used to get those, because we used to get those, the Hostess fruit pies in like that crinkle wrap.
Yeah.
You know, now I guess they put them in a box and they're not Hostess anymore and whatever. They're kind of dry and you don't have as much fruit. These are fucking awesome. Check them out. I think they sell them in grocery stores because I found mine at Publix, and they were just awesome.
We also got breakfast. We found a place. Actually, there's something I liked about this Tinley Park, Chicago area. They had about four pancake houses all within a 3-mile radius.
Oh, nice.
So I was looking through which one looked like it was the best. We found a place we went to. I was able to get my red velvet, and they had you know, the cream cheese frosting on the top. They had a bunch of chocolate chips on it. And it's funny because when I got that plate, I thought of you because you said, you know, red velvet's something that you got to do right, that you can easily mess it up. And they nailed it. It was not 100%. I would say like I've had a slightly better red velvet pancake. But especially considering I can't even go to IHOP to get them anymore, it was a very special treat to me. And I'd give it a 95% as far as quality goes. Man, it was a delicious pancake. They had all sorts of stuff, including Joe got pancakes with it. It was like a Oreo cookie pancake where they had like these crushed Oreos on it and stuff, and the cream cheese frosting. They had the. Have you ever heard of? I made this once. Captain Crunch encrusted French toast.
Yep, absolutely.
Have you had it before?
I have had about seven different cereal crusted French toast, and Captain Crunch would be right up there.
Whew. It kind of, I didn't have it there. The pancakes and my eggs were filling enough, but it kind of caramelizes, doesn't it, when you cook it on the pan?
Yeah, it depends on how you do it. I've had some that hasn't been all that great. Mm-hmm. And then I've had others where if you can get fat into that cereal when it's crusted, like if it's butter or what, it's then it can be over the top.
This conversation has been specifically geared toward all of you dieting right now. I'm very sorry. They're all in their treadmills just dying right now. So what's the game plan going to be then? Are you going to try to still continue to maintain body fat levels or?
Yeah, I want to stay lean. Okay. Yeah, I definitely want to. I'd like to get a little bit leaner, but you know, I like to be lean, and I don't struggle to be lean when there's not a prep or a show on the table.
Yeah.
But it becomes, you know, I'll get to the end of the week and I'll be on Saturday and I'll be like, what's the difference? I can eat with my family. I'm going to stay just as lean as I am right now.
Yeah.
And it's very, very easy for me to maintain. Plus, I get the added benefit of being full, which I have not felt in a very long time. And I get a little bit of my strength back.
Hmm.
So I actually look better and feel better when I'm at that 8 to 10 week out type of look.
Yeah.
Than I do when than when I get real lean. So I'll see how it goes, but I have too much curiosity based on, you know, how many mistakes I made during this prep that I have to see what I can do by pulling back. And I would not be surprised if my metabolism, I mean, I just went a week and didn't eat much until later in the week. And then, you know, I was eating pretty much crap. I wasn't eating a ton of it. Like it was a 7-day skip load, but I was eating plenty. And I can tell. I'm like, God, I'm going to lose this water and I'm not going to be in the same condition I was, but I'm going to be goddamn close to it. As far as lean, I haven't gained much of any body fat over the course of this week.
That's cool.
So I want to see metabolically, you know, where I am. Was I basically squashing my metabolism because my calories are so low and my output was so high? It's very, very possible.
Absolutely.
So it'll be interesting to see, and I have enough curiosity. I think I'll push forward a little bit, but definitely, you know, TRT. Am I going to lose some fullness from that? Of course. At the same time, like I said, I have not been impressed with the, like, I have this huge, you know, change in muscularity or in size by taking all this shit. So now, if I was in the off season and I had the calories, then I'd probably be growing like a son of a bitch.
Right.
But I'm not willing to do that. Once I go to the off season, if I were to do that, then I'm pretty much just back in the game. And I don't want to do that.
Right on. That makes sense.
Well, I want to, but I don't want to because of the risk.
Yeah. What might not be in your best interest. Not at this point, at least.
I know it wouldn't. Nothing has changed since 2013 in the sense that I'm not going to be able to run gear all of a sudden 5 years later and not have blood issues. I'm very aware of that.
Okay. Well, this has been a good show, man. Different than our normal one. You know, Scott was working today. He's got a new job. He probably doesn't want us to disclose anything about that. So I'm going to leave that out from there. But we're going to work on getting him back for the next episode. We had the S2H drawers of S2H contest. I think that we have all submissions in, and I would have liked to have completed that today, but things were kind of a little bit off. Plus I literally just got back in town, last night, yesterday, and I'm still going through all my emails and DMs and stuff, just trying to get caught back up. So why don't we do this? I'll tally up everything and I'll send over all the entries to you in text, Skip. You can tell me what your favorite is. I'll pick my favorite. I'll do the same with Scott. And then we will put those up to be judged on the Advices Radio Instagram page. Sound like a deal?
Sounds good.
All right, cool. And same scenario on the shout outs, guys. It's been a busy day here at the Advices Radio Studios, so I didn't have a chance to do our normal shout out thread. That will be back next week as well. Skip, is there anything else I'm missing on the program today that we should mention?
I don't think so. I think we're good.
Other than go to teamskip.com to reach out to Skip Hill. See, I did it again. All right, guys. For another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear, I'm Scott McNally with Skip Hill. We will see you soon. One, two, three, like King Midas, and that's where Scott goes out. That he touched turned to gold. He's the greatest of the great. I get it straight. He's great. Plain fame because his name is known in every state. His name is Jada. See him play. We'll make you say, goddamn, that DJ made my day. Like the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. He's a maker, a breaker, and a title taker. Like a little old lady who lives in the shoe.
Advices Radio Network.